My Land, My Choice. A short story by Christopher J. Weeks. Narrated by Christopher J. Weeks. A Doorway production. Part 1. Sunny and Bloody Arizona. I had never endured a summer so damnably hot before. 2 weeks straight of over 105 degree temperatures and a sweltering 90 degrees at night, I was baking like a spit-roasted suckling pig in the blazing Arizona sun. My sister assured me that I would adjust quickly to living down at the southwestern desert flats because it was a different kind of heat than a humid Midwest. It was dry heat. Dry or not, 105 degrees is still 105 degrees, and my pink skin still burns. And since I am such a happily rotund man who enjoys a heaping plate of pasta now and then, my body drags like dead weight in a miserable desert climate. By noon each day, I just want to go lie down in the back of the store with the air conditioning blowing full blast on my sweaty belly and sleep. I knew I'd made a big mistake when I decided to leave my comfortable job in Dayton, Ohio, driving a local bread truck. I traded a sure thing to take a stab in the dark at a high-risk adventure all the way down in Y, Arizona. You heard me right. The city I am living in now is aptly named Y. And more than once a day I wonder, why am I even living in this rat hole? As one local paper described it, Y is a ramshackle wasteland of a town in the middle of Nowheresville with rotting houses and double-wide trailers. It boasts of a couple saloons and a single small cafe attached to a full-service gas station called, in good old Americana tourist trap cheese, the Why Not Cafe. And I, the gullible fool that I am, bought Why Not on a whim when my genius of a real estate agent sister, Debbie, coerced me into buying it. Living only a short drive from Y in Gila Bend, Arizona, Debbie heard about the investment opportunity and after seeing it for herself, was sure that this was the perfect project for me. It is a steal of a deal and also a great chance for Katie to start over again. Katie, my troubled 15-year-old daughter, was still mourning the death of her mom. Our house in Dayton was no longer a comfort because memories of her mom's absence tormented her like a menacing ghost. Trying to get her to leave her dark bedroom and go out with her friends was like pulling teeth. The rainy Ohio climate wasn't helping either. A cloud of dark gloom seemed to cover everything in the house. So my pushy sister was adamant. The Arizona sun would do her wonders, and a change of scenery was just the change she needed. In my natural compliance, I took Debbie's stupid advice and bought the place. Why did I trust her so easily? Ever since I was a kid, I always thought Debbie was the smartest person around. But I should have known better. She gets me in trouble every time. Mark, you and Katie will love it down here, she said. And then with her droll sense of humor, Debbie chuckled and said before she hung up the phone, and Mark, why not? Get it? Why not? Yes, sis, I get it. Now, after driving 1,928 long, lonely miles and pouring my last penny in this desert wasteland, I keep asking myself, why, oh, why did I ever come to Y? Living here in a virtual no man's land of lost souls and mangy coyotes, life seemed to go from bad to worse. Just this morning on my short drive to work, I spotted another dead corpse lying spread eagle in the middle of Interstate 85. At first, I thought the brown skin baking in the sun was the leathery hide of a small mountain goat. But the closer I got as I drove by, I realized it was the dried-out torso of a young, runaway Mexican boy. With 2 plastic gallons of water still tied to his waist, in a torn camouflage shirt soaked in blood, I knew this was another casualty shot dead from the patrolling ICE agents. I was growing callous to seeing human flesh decaying in the desert sand. Ever since the new law allowing for the extermination of any illegals found on Arizona land, the My Land, My Choice legislation that passed in the Arizona House a year ago, dead corpses lying in the desert had become too common a sight. And with the city of Y being so close to the southern Arizona border, I now know why buying the gas station was so cheap. This godforsaken town was like living in the Wild West with Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday. No one in their right mind would ever want to live down here. Prickly cacti and bullets fired in the blue desert sky have a funny way of driving down property values. And the mayhem just kept growing worse. 2 weeks earlier, it was reported that a large group of migrants were being smuggled by a cartel from Sonoyta, Mexico, on Highway 2 across the Arizona border. The leader of this group was a notorious drug trafficker who used young children as a cover for his operations. When word got out that they had been spotted heading into the Oregon Pipe National Park, a posse of local farmers and ICE agents gathered right outside my store to make plans to hunt them down. The group was known to hide in the foothills of Keno Peak, but the 50 border agents and 20 local farmers encircled them and opened fire, killing over 250 unarmed Mexican families. One of the witnesses said that there was so much blood on the ground that Growler's Wash, a flat riverstone pathway leading up to the mountain trail, was coated crimson red. Part 2. The Law is the Law. When I first moved down here, I thought the locals were telling tall tales to try to scare me. One toothless old grandma, who came in every day for a pack of Camel Lights and some friendly banter, described in delightful detail how she heard about the huge number of organized killing parties who patrolled the Arizona borderlands. After taking a deep puff of smoke, she explained how a common hunting party would normally include 20 or 30 four-wheel drive pickup trucks flying American flags, zooming up and down the migrant escape trails looking for Mexicans to shoot like they were wild boar. I ignored most of what she and other regulars told me because it just seemed too far-fetched. The idea of shooting whole families in broad daylight reminded me of the kind of demented horror shows that Katie would watch on TV. I hated it when she would binge-watch those shows. I told her they would rot her brain. But after seeing more and more of these same kinds of pickup parties stopping off in my store to get Red Bull and whiskey before heading south, fully armed and loaded for bear, I began to realize this mass slaughter of migrants was really happening. At first, I didn't want to believe what I was hearing. Nor did I have an opinion about it because I just moved in and I wanted my business to go well. And after hearing so many of the regulars say to me when they would stop off to fill up their tank, "It is legal after all and the law's the law," what was I to do? One bright Saturday morning, as I was restocking the candy aisle, I heard the jingle of the front door alert me that another customer just entered the store. "Hey, Marky Mark. Do you have an extra Butterfinger to spare for your wonderful older sister?" Oh yeah, I almost forgot. Debbie was coming to pick up Katie for the day. She mentioned something on the phone 2 days before about how she had some time off and wanted to take her favorite niece to a swanky mud bath and all-day spa. My sister sure loved being pampered, and now she had someone to share her affection for luxury with. Debbie was toting her new $2,000 Louis Vuitton handbag that she coyly flashed in front of my face, trying to get me to look impressed or say something. But I didn't take the bait. Instead, I asked her why she never told me about the crazy stuff that was going on down at the border before I bought the place. Her response was classic Debbie. "Mark, you know how I hate politics. And you have to admit, this place you bought is a cash cow." "But sis," I stood up handing her a king-size chocolate bar, They are slaughtering people. Don't you think I would have liked to know that before I moved Katie all the way down here? She's only 15, for crying out loud. Taking a big bite from the candy bar, she chewed a while and then wiping a small bit of chocolate from the side of her mouth said, I think it's okay to scare the bloody heck out of the migrant trespassers. They've been freeloading off us for far too long, driving down property value and keeping away tourists. She immediately saw my look of disgust. Kidding, Marky. I'm just kidding. Relax, little brother. Now, where is Katie? She always did that. Say something completely outrageous and then expect you to ignore it as if it was no big deal. I kept pressing. But Deb, doesn't it in the least bit bother you that Mexicans are dying only a mere 30 miles from here? Makes me feel a bit guilty, like I am complicit in all the killing going on. I hate it. Ignoring what I just said, she headed down the aisle back to the office to find Katie. There she is. Out from behind the counter came my smiling daughter, who gave her aunt a long hug. It was clear she loved her Aunt Debbie. Is that a brand new Louis Vuitton? Dad, can I get one? Debbie, don't corrupt my daughter. And have her back before dark. There are a lot of drunks on the road these days, I said, pointing at her with a chubby index finger. Debbie patted her handbag while feigning a tough guy sneer. Believe it or not, Marky, I'm packing heat in my bag. So it's the bandits that need to look out. Right, darling? She said with a wink towards Katie. And hey, why else do you think I needed to buy such a large handbag? Debbie then put her arm around her niece's slender shoulders and they both sashayed out the front of the store. See you, Dad, Katie said as the doorbells jingled on their way out. My sister drove me crazy. Ever since her husband from Phoenix left her for a younger, skinnier woman, Debbie has had a devil-may-care attitude that tended to skirt on the edge of hard-heartedness. She loved to spend the boatload of money she got from her divorce settlement. And now with Katie in town, she had someone to spoil. I guess after losing a mom, it was nice Katie had someone who would dote over her. Buying things has a way to take the sting of loss away. The rest of the day, the store had quite a bit of traffic. People buying ammo, trucks fueling up their tanks and extra gallons of gas they stored in a back trailer, and caravans of smaller cars painted with slogans on the side of the car driving by that read, My land, my choice, and go back to Mexico or be shot. I couldn't believe how cruel people seemed to be down here in the South. How did I not hear about this in the Dayton press before I bought this place? I had a few minutes to myself because there were no customers in the store. I decided to read one of the front page articles in a daily paper I had stacked near the front counter. The one that caught my eye had an article on the bottom page which said, Now that the legislation has been finalized in the Arizona House, any illegal alien found crossing the border will be considered a non-person. I wondered what that meant. A non-person? It sounded ominous. The article continued, Any legal citizen who corrals one of these non-persons, catches them on the run, or snares them in a human leg trap or trapping pit, has the right to shoot them dead, hang them, or exterminate them in any way necessary in order to eradicate them from Arizona land. I remember my fourth grade teacher telling me that I kept getting terrible marks in English class because I struggled to understand what I was reading. Bad comprehension, my report card said. I think I still am struggling with it because I wasn't understanding a word of what I was reading from this article. Could this actually be true? Was I stupid? Or was the Arizona government sanctioning the mass murder of innocent human beings? How could the elected officials allow for such legislative atrocities? As I was caught in my own world of confusion, a tall farmer with a handlebar mustache woke me from my daze when he slid a tin of tobacco across the counter and said, Crazy world, isn't it, buddy? But as they say, the law is the law. I rung up what the man owed me. That will be $15.49. He slid me a $20 bill and said, smiling, Keep the climate change. People sure are nice down here, as long as you were born on the right side of the border. Part 3. Stolen Doritos. Dad, I need you out here. Come quick! Katie never raised her voice like that. What is going on? I jumped out of my seat and went to see what the matter was. Before I was able to get to my daughter, a short, sweaty Latino man with a torn shirt and bullet wound in his leg was pointing a gun at my trembling Katie. I also noticed out of the corner of my eye two small Mexican children over in the snack aisle, and what I assumed to be their mother grabbing bags of chips by the armfuls and stuffing them in a large black plastic garbage bag. The man yelled back to them, "Apurate, Maria, grab as much as you can!" Flashing the small gun towards me, he said, "Vete, vete!" I quickly put my hands up and said, "Take all you want, I mean no harm. Apurate, vamonos!" He yelled back to his family again. You could see the terror in his eyes. He was as desperate as a spooked rabbit. He did not look like he was dangerous, nor did I think he intended to shoot me. "Chill out, man," I said. "I'm serious. I mean you no harm." He then turned on his heels and ran toward his family, grabbing the two children by the neck and pushing them out the swinging front doors. Grabbing the bag and then slinging it over her back, his wife followed quickly behind them. "What just happened?" I asked Katie. "Dad, all I know is that this small Mexican family came in real quiet, and then I saw them take one of the boxes of garbage bags, open it up, and start filling it with Doritos. I asked them to stop, and then suddenly, the dad came at me with a gun." My sweet daughter then broke down in tears, sobbing on my shoulder. "I was scared to death. I thought he was going to shoot me." Just then, outside of the store, I could hear a pair of squealing wheels and a round of loud pops. I ran to the picture window that had the neon sign flashing open, and I couldn't believe my eyes. The mom and dad, who had just left the store, lay dead in the parking lot, surrounded by broken bags of scattered Doritos that looked like orange snowflakes sprinkled upon the surface of the black pavement. Three federal ICE agents dressed in desert tan riot gear were scrambling to find the two terrified children who scampered into the clump of sagebrush that lined the back of the store. "Don't let them out of your sight, Charlie, and fire on anything that moves." After a few seconds, I could hear two more pops, and a snarling agent came around the back corner, dragging the two tiny bodies along the pavement, leaving a trail of smeared blood behind. "Got 'em, Sarge, but I hate those nasty cholopods. They aren't kidding when they say they jump. Those darn vagrants are covered with them." After piling the two tiny dead bodies on top of their parents, the agent then began pulling out spiny cactus barbs that were lodged in his bare forearm. "Ouch! Those stupid kids, they thought they could hide in a cactus plant. Now look at me. These prickers are really hurt." "Shut up, Charlie, you big baby," said the leader of the group. "Let's pour some gas on these bodies and then we can keep moving toward the border. The rest of our team is waiting for us." Giving the agent a crisp $10 bill, he said, "Here, pay the owner for a few gallons. We can burn them up here and get on our way." While sucking on a small prick of blood that was beginning to ooze red on his index finger, the man started walking to the front doors to pay for the gas. "Hey, mister, sorry about the mess. Don't worry about it. We'll burn the remains, and then you can toss the smoldering bones on the side of the road. Hope those pests didn't steal too many snacks. Just send a bill to our ICE office, and I'm sure they'll reimburse you. Oh, yeah, here's $10 for the gas." I couldn't take the money. It felt like being paid off with 30 pieces of silver. It was blood money. "No," I said, "you keep it. I will be just fine." The agent gave me a cocky smirk and then pocketed the money. "Suit yourself," he said, and then turned back to the other agents who were already pouring a stream of gas on the dead family. I had to turn away. I went to check on Katie, who was trembling in the back office, trying desperately to wipe away her tears with her long-sleeved t-shirt. Neither of us saw anyone shot in Dayton before, and now a whole family was dead. I couldn't imagine how a 15-year-old girl would process this. All I could think of were those two kids being dragged across the parking lot. "Dad, can I spend a week with Aunt Debbie? I need to get away from here." I didn't know what to say, but I understood. I held her for a while in my arms and then said, "Katie, I am sorry. It always takes a bit of getting used to when you move to a new place. I'd like you to just hang in there for a while at our house, and soon you'll get over it. And plus, I'm not sure about having you being gone a whole week. You still have school, and I don't want you to fall behind the rest of the kids." "But Dad," a quick burst of anger flashed across her face, "I really am tired of this place. I feel safe with Aunt Debbie, and she at least has time to listen to me. You are always serving customers. I feel like I only get in your way." Ouch. That hurt. When I drove the bread truck back in Ohio, I was done at 5:30 p.m. and Katie had all my attention. Now, running this gas station and cafe was a job that seemed to never end. I could see fear in Katie's eyes, pleading with me to let her go. "It's just 1 week. It is not like I'm quitting school altogether." "Okay," I finally relented. "But promise me, you won't let your aunt buy you any more of those expensive clothes. Well, at least not the snooty designer crap she wears." She hugged me tight and said, "Okay, Dad, I won't." Aha, I got a quick smile from her. That counted for something. Part 4. A Hippie Encounter. The next couple of weeks were relatively quiet at the store. After Katie got her fill of Debbie for the week, she reluctantly agreed to come and work a few hours and not quit the store altogether. And I agreed to close earlier on Tuesdays and Thursdays so I could spend some quality evenings at home with her. We usually ended up watching her stupid horror movies, but at least I was able to sit next to her, just enjoying our time together. Just trying to be a good single dad. I'm not sure how well I was doing. It was another long, dusty day when a few crusty farmers stopped off to fill up their work trucks. Some tan tourist wanted to have a burger on the new patio by the 20-foot-tall cactus in front of the cafe, and a college hiking group from Phoenix picked up some trail mix on their way to spend a day on the desert paths around Bates Mountain. Two of the cooler guys in a group tried to flirt with Katie, who was bagging their stuff behind the counter, but she was extremely shy and kept her head down, making sure not to have any eye contact with the boys at all. It was also obvious that she was still a little fearful of customers after the encounter with the Mexican family a few weeks before. I needed to rescue her from these creeps. "Hey, fellas, can I help you?" I said as I came out of the office trying to suck in my belly to look a bit more intimidating. A long-haired student wearing a peace sign on his t-shirt with a full beard and expensive wire-rimmed sunglasses turned toward me and said, "Yeah, man. We heard rumors that it was unsafe to go hiking south of Phoenix because a caravan of dangerous migrants from Mexico are said to be running rampant. We were even told a few of them were shot dead right around here. Is that true?" I didn't know what to say, nor did I want to strike up a casual conversation about the recent horrific killings with some young hippie wannabe. I decided to remain silent while I packed up a stick of beef jerky, a few Mike and Ike's candies, and water bottles I placed in a small plastic bag before ringing up his order. Dude, my friends and I thought we'd make a day of it now that the weather's dipped below 100 degrees for a few days. We even brought our rifles and crossbows with us, hoping to possibly shoot a few of them dirty migrants down. Sounded like a good time, an excellent way to blow off some steam. Get out of my store, right now, I shouted, unable to hold in my rage. These are human beings you're talking about. No, they are not dangerous, and no, they are not for sport. I threw the bag at the arrogant kid and said, forget your money and take your sorry friends with you, and may God have mercy on your souls. The young man looked bewildered. What's your problem, man? The law is the law. We are within our rights to shoot illegal immigrants found crossing the border in Arizona. Don't you want the land exterminated of these rats? Jeez, dude. He picked up the plastic bag and bolted, flipping me the bird on the way out the door. I never wanted to strangle a kid more. Dad, why do you always take the side of the Mexicans? Katie stared at me with a look I never saw before in her face. It was cold, almost like she wanted to hurt someone. Katie, what do you mean? I don't take the side of anybody, and I certainly don't condone murder. I was still a bit bewildered by the look on her face. Don't you remember? That terrible man tried to kill me the other day. He held a gun to my face. I don't understand. Whose side are you on? I never saw this side of Katie before. Well, Aunt Debbie's on your side, and she was talking about how you poured all your hard-earned money into this place, and they just come in here thinking they have every right to steal all your stuff. I hated to think that Debbie's bitterness might be rubbing off on Katie. Katie, all they wanted were a few bags of food. It's no big deal. And how would you like to be on a run from people trying to kill you and your children? Cut them some slack. I wanted to protect my young, innocent Katie from becoming jaded the way Debbie was. It isn't fair, Dad. You don't deserve to be treated like that. It's our property. It's our land. Those were our Doritos. We should be able to do with it as we wish since we didn't ask them to come over here. The law's the law. Shoot 'em all. I couldn't believe my ears. Katie, what has gotten into you? We are talking about people here, fellow human beings, made in the image of God himself. Don't you care what God thinks of them? Dad, who knows what God thinks? The Bible's an old book. My teachers at school mock it, and if God is so good, then why did he let Mom die? If he isn't going to protect us, we need to do something. She bolted back into the office, slamming the door. I sat down behind the counter to gather my thoughts. I was growing concerned for Katie. She seemed to be worse off than she was when we were back in Dayton. And I needed to talk to Debbie. What kind of baloney was she feeding my daughter? Part 5. A Blue Ford Truck. I convinced Debbie to come over on Friday night to hang out with her little brother to watch some old family favorites. And I figured this would be the perfect time to also pepper her with questions concerning Katie. I wanted to know what harebrained advice she's giving to my daughter. Surprisingly, Katie also had plans that night too, and she seemed a bit more upbeat of late. A few friends from school invited her over for a small sleepover, and they were also going to watch some movies. I felt really good about it. Finally, some normalcy around the house. Maybe we were all settling into this strange town after all. Debbie came barging in the front door with two pizza boxes in her right hand and her Louis Vuitton was hanging off the elbow of her left arm. Well, Marky, it isn't like Pizza Boy pizza from home, but it is close enough. I ordered you your favorite, Meat Lovers with jalapeno peppers, and I got myself a bottle of cheap red wine. I smiled because Debbie had on her favorite Cincinnati Reds hat with a black cotton and cashmere Christian Dior sweatshirt. Debbie, you are just spending a night with your fat brother. You don't need to dress to impress. Always need to look good, my dear brother. Always. Once she sat down on the couch next to me, she opened up her box of pizza and started eating. Slow down, sis. You are as hungry as a wolf. I looked at the strange assortment of vegetables and pineapple on top. Let me guess. Vegan and gluten-free pizza. Yuck. Just then, Katie came out of her bedroom wearing a new white blouse, and her young, pretty face was covered up with a mountain of thick makeup and gaudy black eyeliner. Was she trying to look like an Egyptian? She ran over to hug Debbie and said, "What do you think? It is the cute shirt you bought me. Girl, I love it. You won't be able to keep the boys off you." "Boys? You never told me about any boys." I didn't like thinking about my baby daughter near any hormone-driven idiot. I got up to take a closer look at her. "And what do you have plastered all over your face? You almost look plastic." "Daddy, it's called foundation." She immediately grabbed her backpack and slung it over her shoulder as a loud rumbling truck pulled in the driveway to pick her up. It is Mary and her sister and her two nerdy neighbors. They are going to watch the movies with us and go home. Nothing to worry about, Dad. I have no interest in them. Debbie took a swallow of wine and then said, "Mark, relax. She and her friends are as harmless as turtle doves. Let the girl go and no more stupid questions." She turned to Katie and added, "Your makeup looks great. Don't listen to your father. Have fun." After choking down another bite of her pizza, she stood up to kiss Katie in the forehead. "See ya, girl, and live it up." My heart grew anxious as I watched her head out the front door and climb into an old beat-up blue Ford truck with four people already stuffed inside. Then it drove away. Oh, well, I exhaled some pent-up frustration and sat back down on the couch, grabbing the largest piece of pizza in the box. Debbie decided to turn on the TV to find some news while we each stuffed our bellies full. It reminded me of being back at home in Ohio growing up. We always ate our dinners in the living room while watching the news with our dad. Immediately, reports of violent protests in Phoenix over the My Land, My Choice legislation were exploding across the downtown streets. "Oh, not this crap again," Debbie said. "I am so sick of hearing all the bleeding hearts complain about the murder of migrants. Can't they just let it be? The law is now the law." I knew that Debbie had a hard heart, but not this hard. "Debbie, how can you say that? They are simple peasant people trying to escape the poverty of Mexico. Cut them some slack." I hated arguing with her because she never listened to me. Whenever we were together, she always fashioned herself as the older, wiser big sister, and I was the clueless younger brother. It drove me crazy. But with this issue, I didn't care. She was just plain wrong. So I continued, "Deb, your cynicism is rubbing off on Katie, and I don't like it. She really looks up to you, you know. And you are poisoning her attitude. It really kind of scares me." "Listen, Mark, I don't care. The experts who wrote the law have both the intelligence and the power to think on our behalf. If they have determined that killing the migrants is in our state's best interest, then so do I. And I am not going to lose any sleep over it." She poured herself some more wine and took two huge gulps. "Wait, wait, wait! Are you serious?" I was appalled by what my very own sister was saying. "Deb, We were both raised in a Christian home. We both took communion each Sunday. We even sang songs about how Jesus loves all the little children of the world. What changed you? Because I know as a kid, you would never support the legal slaughter of human beings. She said nothing. I shut off the television and walked out on the back porch to clear my mind. After opening the glass slider, I looked up into the night sky to try to stop my mind from racing. I was burning up, and it wasn't just from the 92-degree heat that was rising off the hot Arizona sand. My sister thought she was always a superior person, and that made me furious. The night sky was clear as crystal, and the stars were sparkling like fine jewels with the Southern Cross taking center stage. Debbie whispered through the open crack of the slider, "Mark, I heard something moving outside. Sounds like you are not the only one out there." I turned toward her as she switched on the back porch light from inside the house. She wanted to get a good look at the backyard. In the same moment the light clicked bright, someone jumped out from behind the juniper bushes, grabbing me tightly around the throat. I then felt a small, sharp object being pressed against the base of my spine. "Take it easy, hombre, and don't move. I will kill you if you shout. And tell the little lady inside the house not to move. No calling the cops. And if she tries to run, you will die. I need some money in a car. I am being chased by a group of your people, and if you don't get it for me, I will not hesitate to stick this knife in your spleen and watch you bleed to death." "Okay, okay. Let me ask my sister." The person behind me eased his grip off my throat, but the pain of the knife was more acute. "Debbie, the man needs my car and some cash. Can you bring it out to him right now?" I could see Debbie's lips stiffen, and she said, "Tell him to hold on. I need to get my purse."
"Hurry up, lady, or your brother dies, and no grabbing a phone."
I could see Debbie inside the house picking up her giant Louis Vuitton bag. She grabbed it by the handles and started walking toward us with the other hand searching for something inside of it.
"Come on, senorita, I don't have all day."
The man was nervous, and each time he talked, the sharp edge dug deeper in my skin. I could feel a warm trickle of blood dripping down my back. Debbie was 5 paces away when she calmly approached the man. "I am just reaching for my keys and my wallet. Don't panic, sir." Walking closer, she started to pull out her hand from the purse and said, "Here you go, mister. Take this to hell with you." And in her right hand, there was a loaded 9mm pistol. She fired 2 quick shots in the center of his forehead, and his body instantly went limp and fell hard on the surface of the wooden deck. Debbie looked at me with a cold stare and said, "What's done is done." Part 6. Debbie. Almost 3 months went by since that horrible night, and I still can't forget it. Debbie, being the older sister that she was, took immediate control and pulled the body off the porch, found some gas, and lit it on fire. I went back inside while it burned and sat on a couch with a blank stare because the pop of the gunshot was still ringing in my ears. We decided to never talk about that night again, and we both wanted to keep Katie from hearing about how her dad almost died. It would have destroyed her. Well, the killing around the border has continued, and I personally have counted 50 people I saw shot, run over, or caught in homemade traps. I still can't believe how much delight the farmers take in sharing their savage exploits. Murder has become mundane, and for now, it is a new form of fun and excitement, and it has hit way too close to home for me. Debbie still comes to visit Katie often, but she and I rarely speak to each other. I know I owe her my life, but at what cost? My heart is sick, I hate this place, and nothing will change that. I also have made my decision. I'm going to sell Why Not Cafe and move back home to Dayton with Katie and pick up where we left off. I just need to find the right time to tell Katie and Deb. It was a strange late afternoon in Y. A few drizzles of rain were lightly dropping on the thirsty, dry soil, which was immediately absorbed, leaving no trace. The clock in the living room said 5:30 p.m. when Debbie and Katie pulled into the driveway together. What was Debbie doing driving around with Katie on a school day? And 5:30 is awfully late to come home. Hey, Dad, we brought home some dinner, Kung Pao chicken. Aunt Debbie paid for it. I looked at Debbie to give her a nod of thanks, but I could clearly see there was something off. She wasn't her same charming self. So, what were you two fashion moguls up to? Another shopping spree at Ann Taylor's? Or maybe you went for a quick full-body massage? Neither of them said a thing, nor did they give a hint of anything I said as being humorous. I thought I was a funny guy. Dad, what do we have to drink? We need something to go with dinner, is all my daughter said. Not sure, honey. Why don't you go check in the kitchen while I help Aunt Debbie set the table? Debbie would not make eye contact with me. What's up, sis? I know we have not been on the best of terms, but this silence between us has to stop. I don't want to relive my 16th year all over again with you. Mark, you're going to hate me, but I don't care. And I'm not ashamed of what I did. She looked at me with an uncomfortable frown. I got a call from Katie last week because she needed my help. With what? I asked. Remember that nerdy boy driving her in the blue Ford? I nodded. Well, he got your sweet daughter pregnant. That same night we killed the Mexican, Katie got knocked up. She slopped out some rice from the white box onto a paper plate and then said, she asked me to take her to the local clinic and get a quick procedure done. And now it's over. Then a hard look came over her face. So don't ask me any more about it. What's done is done. And it's Katie's body, so it was her choice. I hesitated in responding because I didn't want to blow up. Instead, I took a deep breath and then replied, you helped Katie kill her baby? Saving me is one thing, sister, but purposely snuffing out an innocent life is quite another. I didn't know my sister as well as I thought I did. I asked her why she did it. And in a low, monotone voice, she said, Mark, the law is the law. If you can't protect you and your family, I will.